Greetings, brethren. I trust that your Feast of Tabernacles is going well. Over the last several years, the Behind of Work films have focused on a number of areas of the work that show that the Living Church of God is really doing a worldwide work. We've seen the efforts of the Living Church of God among our members in Africa, in the Spanish-speaking world, and in the far-flung parts of the Asia-Pacific region of the globe. In this year's film, we're going to focus on another vital area of the work that is also global in scope, the youth programs of the Living Church of God. Jesus Christ gave His church a multifaceted mission to preach the gospel of the kingdom of God when Christ will return and set up a new world government on this earth. We're also commissioned to warn this world, especially the Israelite nations, about the prophesied calamitous events that are coming in the not-too-distant future. But there's another aspect of this mission that is mentioned in Luke chapter 1, verse 17, and that is to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. And that includes young people. The Living Church of God youth programs are designed to teach young people about God's way of life, so they can learn to enjoy the benefits that come from actually living God's way of life now, so they can be ready to teach God's way of life to others in the coming kingdom of God. In this year's film, we're going to take you behind the scenes to show you how the Living Church of God youth programs are structured and why we use the approaches that we do. We're going to discuss some of the challenges faced when you work with young people and lessons that we've learned over the years. We're also going to describe the biblical principles and values these programs are built upon and methods that we use to achieve the goals of the youth programs. We're also going to explain the reasons behind rules and traditions that have been developed over the years to help our young people recapture true values that have been lost by so many in our modern societies today. The purpose of the Feast film this year is to help everyone gain a better understanding of what we're trying to achieve as we prepare our young people for an exciting future, both now and in the coming kingdom of God. So, to learn more about the Living Church of God youth programs, let's watch the Behind the Work film for 2025, Preparing the Youth.
I've often said that everything I know, I learned at camp. And that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much. Over the four decades that I've been involved with camp, I've learned a lot of lessons about organization, about working with people, and most of all, growing in love for the young people that we serve. And it's very gratifying to see young people come to camp. They grow up, they get married, they have children, and now their children are coming to camp. And not only are their children coming to camp, but they're getting married, and they'll have children as well. So it's very gratifying to see that, and we have many examples of that over the years. You know, the summer camp has grown tremendously over the last few years in terms of what we've tried to accomplish. Worldwide had a wonderful camp up in Orr, Minnesota. My wife actually attended the first one, which was in Big Sandy, Texas, which was 8 weeks long. But we moved the camp to Orr, Minnesota, and we had wonderful facilities, and we had a wonderful program. But that program had to grow. And over time, it grew. The development of the organization was really wonderful. But after the breakup of Worldwide, Mr. McNair and I had the opportunity to begin to change things over a period of time. And we realized that some of the things that worked in Worldwide were working, but not everything worked as well as we had hoped it would. So many of our young people did not stay with the church, and that's, of course, going to happen no matter what kind of organization you have. But we learned that there are other values that we were not applying. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Jonathan McNair, because we've worked so many years together, and you've had a lot of experience with camp, and I'm sure you have a lot that you can add to the discussion.
Thank you. We were just talking before about the number of years that each of us has been involved in camp. And I think the irony is the first year that I went to camp as a camper was in 1980. And then a couple of years later, 3 years later, I guess, was the first year that you worked as a swim instructor. So just about the time that you were working there as staff, as a minister there, I was going as a camper. And then over the years, I've had opportunities to be involved with camp really in different parts of the world, in New Zealand and Australia, as well as the Philippines. And then, of course, later years there in Michigan and other places. But camp has been a big part of my life. And I guess in more recent years, what really stands out for me is when we were having a conference, and this was when I believe it was the Global Church of God before the precursor to the Living Church of God. And we were having a conference, and Mr. Weston, you gave a presentation, and you talked about how we wanted to build a camp program, programs for our young people, but it was time to take stock of where we were, what worked, what didn't, what were the fruits. And I don't know if you remember that, but it really put the seed in my mind that yes, we can begin to step back and look at the big picture and see what's being accomplished and what we can do. And since that time, I've been encouraged to be able to be involved and, of course, be involved with you. Do you remember that conference and what you said at
Mississippi?
That point? It was. That's right.
I think I commented on it at different times in the Council of Elders, but there as well. And I'm glad it did touch you that way because Mr. McNair has been such an integral part of the whole camp program. He's a strategic thinker. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of the changes that we've made have been as a result of some of the things he's come up with. For example, in the Worldwide Church, we had 4 Christian Living classes during a 3-week period. And you may have remembered those, but it was your relationship to rules, your relationship to money, your relationship to other people, and your relationship with God. And that was over a 4-week or 3-week period.
And I have to say, if I can interrupt, and when I had it with Mr. Ames, and he talked about the 7 laws of success, which came back to haunt me later, because he mentioned that whenever he was speaking somewhere, he said, when I say, what is the 4th law of success? He said, I want you as campers to say, drive. And he said that. Well, years later at a Feast of Tabernacles, I was sitting in the back row as a minister, and he was giving the sermon, and he said, what is the 4th law of success? And cowardly, I sat there and said nothing. And I thought, oh, is somebody going to stand up? Maybe I should. And I didn't. And the moment passed. And in fact, recently, when we were talking, as I was visiting him in the hospital, I brought that up again and said, Mr. Ames, I have to apologize. That day I showed cowardice and I didn't stand up. But that shows, again, his involvement with the camp in all those years. But again, only a few classes in that program. Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell the story of up in Michigan when you and I were sitting in the back during a forum that he was giving, and he went through those, and we looked at each other, and we sat there, and as soon as he said that, we both stood up and said, drive. And everybody looked at us like we were idiots. They had no idea what we were doing.
But he appreciated it.
Yeah.
He appreciated it. But back to your point.
Well, we realized that we had to do more than what was done at Orr. We built on a foundation that had been prepared for us and over decades, literally. And there were so many good things about the program that was developed there. But we realized that we need to do more, and so we decided that we're going to have a Christian Living class every single day. And that we would not apologize for the fact that it's a church camp, because we almost apologized in Worldwide for being a church camp. We didn't want it to look like a church camp. And so we started doing that, but we scattered the Christian Living classes throughout the day. And then Mr. McNair came along and he said, you know, we really need to have it for everybody because the staff wasn't able to attend those classes. We tried to get them to drop in, but it didn't work. And so you persuaded me to go ahead and make the first period Christian Living. And since that time, we talk about first things first. Mm-hmm. And that way the whole camp begins with Christian Living. And we have a number of speakers, and they're very, very good. And I've heard some of the best Christian Living classes you know, here at the camp in Texas. But that's why it's so wonderful to be able to work with someone who has the same vision. And maybe it's not always exactly the same, but we're all pushing in a similar direction. And I really appreciate Mr. McNair in that way. And all the staff, we have so many over the years that have contributed in their own ways. I remember Mr. Lambert Greer making a point one time where he said, you know, we're really not working with these kids for today. We're working for them for 4 years down the road. In other words, they're not going to get everything that we say today, but 4 years down the road, they'll begin to understand.
Especially when we're reinforcing the things that their parents are generally teaching them. And,
right.
And when they come to camp and they hear, well, it's not just their parents, but it's also others and even peers, the other campers,
yes,
who are hearing the same things, and then the instructors here are teaching those same things. But and I would agree that we bounce around a lot of ideas, and thankfully we have staff that is willing to give it a try when we try to implement something, and oftentimes we find out a reason why it may not work logistically. Mm-hmm. But that was our goal from the beginning, to try to analyze, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Can we do it better? Because if we can create an experience for the campers that reinforces God's way of life, and this is a church camp, mm-hmm. it's not a sports camp, it's a church camp, and, but if we can reinforce those values, we're building a future for pillars in the church.
Mm-hmm. Our mission statement has to do with building a culture of purity and honor and respect. Purity in that it is it's God's law, God's way of doing things. Honor, showing honor to others. Even learning how to treat those who are older by standing up when they come into the dorm. If you or I come into the dorm, we teach them that they should stand up and stand up before the hoary head, which is what the Bible says. And there's a certain amount of deference in that way. And then we want them to teach to treat others as they should be treated. And when we say purity and honor and respect, that honor also involves an honor code, that on my honor, you know, I'm going to treat you this way.
Maybe you could give the way you lay it out for the campers when we do orientation, those fundamental principles that you're touching on right now.
Okay, sure. Well, we have three basic rules. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt things, and don't hurt others. And that may sound very simple, but we use that as a template for everything that we do. For example, we don't have practical jokes, even though I know that you and I would like to do practical jokes, but we kind of refrain from doing that. But when we think about not hurting ourselves and not hurting things and not hurting others, practical jokes usually end up hurting one or all three of them. Things get broken. Things get damaged when we start running around through the woods with somebody's pillow. Maybe we take a mattress with a person on it and put them out in the lake on a canoe, because that's retaliation for what we did to them the night before, somebody did to them the night before. And pretty soon, people get hurt. And we want our young people to be safe. And as we know, we have no put-downs. We discourage that. We can't say our kids are perfect. They are kids. But we discourage people putting down others. And we try to teach them that every young person there has a heart. Every young person wants to be accepted. He wants to be respected. She wants people to like her and not to shun her. And so we avoid the cliques as much as we can. We have mechanisms in place. And you might want to speak of some of the mechanisms we have, like in dining hall and elsewhere to break up the cliques.
So years ago at the camp in Michigan, we instituted the tradition that as the dorms come into the dining hall, they zipper. It had first one girl, then one guy, then one girl, then one guy. And this way, in a random way, it brings the girls and the boys together. And then when they go through the line, as they come out of the line, they sit around a table together. And the idea is we can encourage them from the pulpit. We can say you should be talking with different people. You should be getting to know different people. But by having them sit around a table, it actually creates a mechanism that allows that to happen. And so it also allows us to teach courtesy, because then we explain that the young men should take the tray or the dishes of the young lady next to them when it's time to get up and take them to the place where we wash the dishes. But it, having that sitting around round tables with a boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, boy, girl, sometimes with counselors sprinkled in as well, yes, in the mix. The counselors aren't off somewhere else, but the counselors are there in the mix. It creates a workshop, you might say. It's a little sandbox where they can practice the skill that we're teaching them. And the more we can have those as part of the day, which really make up the schedule that we frame, the better they'll be able to actually put into practice what we're teaching them.
And I think that really comes to life when you think of the opposite. When you think of how in high school or junior high school or at a lot of camps, they let kids sit wherever they want to. And so what are they going to do? The natural tendency is they're going to sit with their friends, their buddies, and pretty soon you have an in crowd and everybody else, and you have those that feel left out. And that's why we just don't let them sit any place they want to. We want them to, the mechanism. This is a word that Mr. McNair used a lot of mechanisms we have. We try to avoid problems of behavior so we don't have to deal with it. So there are things like, I often use the example, we don't serve grapes, because we know that if somebody is standing around, you know, boys, if they've got a handful of grapes, they're going to want to take those grapes and put them up against the head of another person, you know, throwing them and that sort of thing. We know that there are certain times during camp when things can get a little bit of out of hand. If they're used to everything, they know that the end of camp is coming. So Mr. McNair and I will go down to the dorms and we will sit and we'll just go in and talk with them.
By simply being around them, being present and walking around, it's a secret mechanism to just damp down any potential enthusiasm in the wrong direction.
Right.
But that's also like the curfew, talking about the evening time. You've mentioned often that if we're going to create a rule, we're going to create a tradition like a curfew time, then we have to stick by it, and we expect not only campers but staff to abide by the curfews that we set.
And if they don't, then we take action. And I think that one of the great lessons that I've learned over the years is that you encourage good behavior and you discourage bad behavior. And that may sound very simple, but honestly, I've seen way too much of that over the years where bad behavior is rewarded and good behavior is not. And that discourages the kids that are trying to do it right, and it really doesn't save the kids that are trying to do it the wrong way, because they're just going to do it their own way.
You know, one of the things you talked about back those years ago at that conference that made an impact on me was the idea that we need to make sure that we don't, within the church, try to replicate or have the idea that we need to replicate what, say, kids in the world have, with sports or with proms or with different activities like that. If we're trying to replicate that, then we're missing the picture of working with our children. So, for example, I think of how we handle our activities and our sports and different activities. We have a variety, and we have the goal of helping every camper to improve to the degree they can, recognizing this is not a sports camp. Our kids come from all different backgrounds in terms of one activity or sport or another. And so therefore, we really need to help each one where they are.
Yes, we want to give them individualized personal attention when it's needed. If you have someone that's having a problem in a certain area, if we've got a staff member that can take them aside and help them with that particular skill. But another thing that we do is we try to cut down the cool factor. And we have a lot of fun with that, especially during our orientation period. You know, when everybody's trying to out-cool everybody else, then everything breaks down. John wants to be cooler than Jim, and so he does something a little bit more crazy. We've seen some awful crazy things over the years. I remember there was a fellow one time that had a trench coat that he wore during the summer because that was cool. Or we have people that, oh, they got to roll up their sleeve because that's cool. Or they got to put their hat on backward. And so I always say, if it's on backward, we don't know if you're coming or going. We would like to know which direction you're going. But when people are trying to be cool, who are they thinking of? They're thinking of number one. And we want our campers to start to think beyond human nature. We want them to start thinking of, how can I help this other person? How can I make this person's day by treating them with respect and not focus on myself, but focus on the other person? Because there are no end of ways that they can be cool. In fact, you told me this morning, he told me that I am really in cool because we're in chapel, by the way, and so we take off our shoes because it's carpeted, it's brand new. So I've got socks that come up like this, and I understand that the cool thing for the kids has been the little ankle socks.
Like mine.
Like yours.
That's right.
And you read in the Wall Street Journal that is gone astray.
Apparently.
And now I'm cool.
You apparently, it's the style has gone full circle, and it's cool to have mid-calf socks.
It took a long time for me to be cool, but finally did.
It was by accident, though. It was on purpose.
Now, I do claim this. I did start the cool thing of rolling up one pant leg, and I was doing that just as a crazy thing. And now you'll actually see sports teams where they have long leg, well, leggings on one side and none on the other. It's amazing. I claim that. That's my fad that I started.
But you have to explain to the audience that's because in our orientation that we have for the campers, we actually draw a comparison between what it's like to try to be cool and what it's like to not worry about being cool. And Mr. Weston, as a means to exaggerate that, he goes through a transformation where he rolls up his sleeves or rolls up his pants leg, and you go through this transformation where you explain what the attempt at being cool is all about.
It's a lot of fun, but it really teaches the young people the difference, and we want them to think, and we're trying to educate them. And I think one of the big things we're doing here, we're not just having fun. You know, kids will have fun a lot of different places, and they'll have fun here. We know they will. But we're trying to educate them as well. And really, we're trying to back up what you as parents are doing. In fact, one of the points that I make in our orientation, staff orientation, is that these are not our kids. They are your kids. And we have a responsibility to return them to you at least as well when they came, or better. And we think in most cases they're a little bit better off. But at sometimes, as Mr. Greer said, it takes 4 years down the road. And I've noticed in the counselor meetings over the years, because every morning we have a counselor meeting, and at noon, that's over breakfast, and every lunch, Mr. McNair takes the department heads, and we talk with them. But I've noticed the counselors will say, you know, these kids are different. They're not like we were. And what they don't realize is that's the way that they were back then, but they have been transformed over a period of time, coming as campers, high school workers, and then eventually assistants to the counselor, and then counselors. And they have transformed, and they've bought into the program. And we're very open. We have something to sell, a better way of life. But we don't sugarcoat that.
And when you talk about education and not having the cool factor, really by having our dorms with young people of all ages from 13 to 17, what we do is try to encourage those campers that are older, that are the 15, 16-year-olds, if they are more mature, if they are bigger, you know, if they are more or less shy, if they are better at sports. The idea is we say, look, you can help the younger ones. You encourage the younger ones. Get your mind off yourself and get your mind on others. Some respond better than others, but that's the idea. Then when they transition to the age of 17 then, or 18 or 19, and they're old enough to serve on staff, that education process continues, where, again, we emphasize not now because they are what we call high school workers, which means that they're 17 or 18-year-olds. Now it's not a time that they get special privilege to not have to do any of the rules or traditions, because now they're past that. They're not campers. But in fact, they're the ones that help to exemplify the traditions. They are the ones who show how it's beneficial to not be cool, but instead reach out to different ones. Mm-hmm. So that educational process continues. And frankly, it continues with us as staff as well, because we do have lots of education going on, whether it's the morning Christian living yeah. or other classes that we have. It's really an education for all of us, mm-hmm. and we all learn.
It's a learning process, and as a young person has to teach those values to those who are younger, they begin to buy into those values. They begin to appreciate them, and they have to explain why they're doing certain things. And it really is an educational process. And one of the things that we reinstituted after it had been lost here a few years ago was a high school staff, what we call high school. It's mainly 17, 18-year-olds, sometimes it's 16-year-olds in rare cases. But we wanted that middle group, those who have been campers for several years, to give back to their younger brothers and sisters. And as they do that, they grow and they begin to understand the values. They go through all the orientation process that we have. And it's pretty intense in the sense that we get off where we're not distracted by anything. There are no distractions out there. They can't see a lake or anything. It's just a closed room. And we tell them, this is our expectation. This is what we want you to do. And, you know, most of them are just magnificent. It's like today we had the skits, and we show them the camp down the road, Camp Bad Manners, and Camp Cool, and Camp Free Time. We have skits that show the good and the bad, what Camp Bad Manners is like, which is down the road, or Camp Cool, which is down the other way, or Camp Free Time, which is someplace else. And then we show them the way that it is at Camp LYC. And we exaggerate certain things, especially the bad examples. But the young people, I think, begin to see why we're trying to do something. And the ones that are in the skits, they begin to really buy into it even more than they did before. Now, they're counselors, so that we've gone to that, you're just using the counselors. So they have already bought into the program to a degree, but it helps reinforce for them what it is like.
I think one of the objectives with that, as with a lot of the things we do here, is defining expectations. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy for us to just stand up here and say, we want you to be good. Don't be bad. You know, don't be naughty. Don't do bad things. Don't be disrespectful. But when we, in an activity, for example, if there's one of the campers is talking when they should be listening, and we stop and say, please listen to the instructor, okay, and then we go on. Now they've learned that, and we're even saying specifically, that's disrespectful, listen to the instructor at this point. And now they learn, oh, that's wrong behavior. And so we have a workshop to actually show right behavior and define what is wrong behavior in the dining hall. If one of the campers gets up and leaves the table before everybody is finished and leaving together, we define that as being impolite. And so we practice in 100 little ways. We practice and we define what is good, what is polite, what is respectful.
Yeah, I saw one time as I was taking a life-saving course where some of the kids were in the stands. They kind of turned their back to the speaker and they were talking. And she said, you're talking while I'm talking. That's rude. And that's what we're talking about. We define behavior because we can say, don't be rude. But if they don't know what rude is, then they're not going to be able to change. So it's very important that we define behavior. It's a teaching process that we have here. This is not just to let the kids have a good time. I think we, with the best of intentions back in Worldwide Days, the way that YOU got started and YOU wasn't all bad, but it didn't have the effect that we had hoped in the long run in some respects. It did for some people, but not everybody. And I think one of the things that happened there was we thought if we give the kids a fun time, if we give them a sports program, they'll stay in the church. And they stayed around the church as long as they had a sports program. But once that sports program was over, they were gone. And so many of them left the church because they were there for the fun. And we're trying to teach them values and really reinforce the values that the parents are giving them.
And I think even though we do have rules or traditions, as we try to say traditions and principles, rules sometimes can have connotations with kids as being overbearing, although rules are rules. But still, we try to explain, this is the way we do things, and we expect you to do those things that way. But at the end of the day, I think most kids, I think they appreciate it. You know, kids like parameters. If there aren't parameters, if there aren't boundaries, it's actually destabilizing for a young person. And so at the end of the day, kids have fun and they enjoy it. And they enjoy that some of the principles, for example, that we don't allow cliquing off, or we don't just highlight those who are the best athletes, but instead we encourage everybody to be involved and have time on the ball. You know, that's important, not just to have time on the ball for the All-Stars, but time on the ball for everybody, so everybody can improve to the degree they can. Well, everybody, at the end of the day, although it's a rule, different ways we do different things involve rules, but at the end of the day, they end up having more fun because they get more time to be active and be learning. So it does end up being more fun, I think, at the end of the day.
Well, I remember one of the campers, or several of the campers, had come from a different camp, and they really didn't like it at first because they had to be someplace at this time and someplace else at the other time. They'd come from an environment where they could just kind of pick and choose whatever they wanted to do. But about halfway through camp, they were saying, you know, we really like this because we get more done. We have more activity, we get more done. And when we talk about doing things decently, in order, without confusion, and in peace, when you do things in decent and orderly, then you do have less confusion. You have people knowing where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there, and then they have that full time to be able to enjoy it. But if you have people showing up 15 minutes late, then that takes away from everybody. And so let's say you have two teams, they show up for basketball, and one shows up 15 minutes late, then you've just hurt everybody else who wanted to play during that time. So it is very important that we do things in a decent, orderly fashion.
One of the things that I think has been helpful over the past couple of 3 years, if I may give a plug for Living Education.
I was thinking that a little earlier, so thank you, because I forgot it already.
Well, it has been a real blessing. I guess maybe we might have talked about it at some point, but it wasn't really the major goal of Living Education to provide staff for camp. But as you look around, a lot of our young people who have been part of Living Education have, I think, been energized and hopefully prepared through going through classes and learning about the Bible and really thinking seriously about this way of life. I think it's helped them to be really productive staff members. And I'm glad that has worked out that way, and I hope it continues to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking last night with several of the incoming Living Ed students, and I'll tell you, they're just really fine people. And this program feeds Living Education, and Living Education feeds this program. It has a circular relationship to it. And it's very important because we're looking at young people. We have the preteen camps, then we have the teen camps, and then we have L4T, which is one of the youth programs that we do have, young adult, 18 to 30, and we have Living Education. And it helps bring them along toward a path toward what we're hoping to see in them, eventually getting married, having families, having stable families, and being able to contribute to the church in a much broader way.
And as you mentioned, really they're all part of the whole in terms of how we can, let's say, as a church, and from the point of view of the church and the administration of the church and the organization of the church, that the point of all of these is truly to reinforce what parents are doing at home, and not to have the vanity that somehow we can either fix kids or we can do all the training of kids. But really, what we do, whether it's the preteen camps or these camps, really it's meant to reinforce what parents are doing at home.
Yeah, the parents have them for quite a long time, for 18 years, roughly speaking. We have them just a few weeks here and there. And if we think that we can do better than the parents, well, then we're making a mistake because they have all the hard work. Frankly, when young people come to the camps, they're in pretty good behavior for the most part.
Sure.
It's amazing to me. And when you tell parents that, well, your son or your daughter was in the choir, and they're shocked that they would actually do that. But there's positive peer pressure. But we see them on their best behavior, you know, most of the time. And we love to see that. And we try to prevent bad behavior. A girl asked me one time, we were coming up to the camp up in Michigan. I had to pick up several staff members at the airport, and they were delayed and delayed and delayed. And so it was into the early morning hours when I had this group of new staff members there. And a girl asked me, she said, what kind of punishment do you have for bad behavior? She was brand new to the program. And I really hadn't thought about it that much. We may take fellowship time away from them. We don't do SWATs or anything like that. But it helped me to realize what Mr. McNair has promoted in so many ways. It's certain mechanisms that prevent bad behavior. We try to cut it off before it starts. And so most of the time they're on wonderful behavior here. And I think that most parents would be really, really pleased with the way that your young people have conducted themselves at the summer camps.
One of the things that we try to help with the young people and helping them become a rounded person by the variety of experiences that we offer. So perhaps it would be helpful to talk about the table topics and dance and the dance and that part of it, because oftentimes parents send their kids to camp, they think of sports and that type of thing, canoeing. But we also have that part of the program that contributes to their decorum and interaction between boy and girl and so on. Perhaps you could tell them about that.
Sure. Well, we have the topics and dance. We have a dance class. And in that dance class, we try to teach them how to conduct themselves, how a young man should go up and ask a young lady politely if she would like to dance or if he may have this dance. And then he leads her out onto the floor, and then he takes her back after the dance is over instead of just walking away and leaving her there like a nickel waiting for change. So we try to teach them courtesy. And that's very important. And we teach the boys to dance with all of the girls as much as they possibly can. Otherwise, you're going to have people that are just going to go for that popular one. And that's the way it is in high school and various other places. Of course, in high school, you go with one person, you stay with the person the whole time. But it's amazing to me how well our young people do step up and do the things that we're asking them to do. And that can serve them well throughout their lives. But they give everybody an opportunity to dance, and they enjoy that. And then we bring them together, and the women's role class usually does the decorations for the topics and dance. And so we also have a speech class, and we teach them to speak and table topics. And that's why we call it topics and dance, because they come in, they have table topics, and then they have a dance after that. And they dress up for it, and it's a special occasion. But we don't have dates for it. We have escorts. They escort a young lady to the dance or the topics and dance. They dance with them the first dance. Then they're expected to dance with all the others. And then the last dance, they will dance with that individual and lead that individual back. So it's a subtle thing, but we don't have dates. We have escorts.
And what better way to teach young men to treat a young woman respectfully than to learn how to properly dance with them? I think it's a great mechanism, again, to learn not only grace and a little bit of exercise, you know, on the floor, and learning to have a bit of agility, but it's also really good for the boys and girls to learn how to be in contact with each other in a way that is respectful.
Yes. And we have other classes, too, that are go beyond sports. For example, this year we have Mr. Braddock teaching a class in plumbing for the boys. And we have a different class for the boys than we have for the girls. We don't teach our daughters to be plumbers. It's okay if they learn some things. It's always helpful. But we want to teach our young fellows what they might do in life. Now, we're not saying they can't be an engineer or something else, but we want to show them some of the trades. And if nothing else, they would be able to help out at home later on, fix a faucet or something along that line. Last year it was on electricity, how to connect wires without electrocuting yourself. And, of course, don't do it at home. We certainly tell them that. But we've had individuals who have gone into an electrical career as a result of it, several that I've heard of. Before that, we had a class in bricklaying. And I think we taught some that they didn't want to be bricklayers because that's hard work. But you have others that take up on that.
And the principle behind that Life Roles class is this. As the Bible teaches, God teaches that boys and girls are different. Men and women are different. And no matter, even if our society says, no, there's no difference whatsoever in any way, shape, or form, we know that's contrary to the Scriptures. So generally speaking, we're trying to encourage the girls in certain areas that are of more natural interest to them and to develop those skills, and the boys to develop other skills. We make no apology for the fact that we will do things different for the boys and girls. And you know, in some corners of the world today, that really flies against popular custom, but that is the way that God approaches it. So we're, in that sense, we're trying to reinforce a biblical principle with a mechanism that we use.
And I would give you credit for that because you really focused on that aspect of things, the camp program, and really pushed for that, and we've developed it, and it's really come a long way since that first year or two. I think they were changing tires or something like that, and we did some electrical work up there in Michigan, and maybe even plumbing, I don't remember for sure, but it's come a long way, and we really have some very fine people teaching these classes, and as much as possible, we have people that are really skilled, even licensed in some of these areas to be able to do it.
One of the things that our brother may have noticed is that we do have a lot of ministers, pastors and their wives who come and serve in the program, sometimes for just a year, sometimes for multiple years. But that is an objective that we've had over this past few years is to help our ministry to understand what we're accomplishing here and the principles so they can be able to certainly answer questions and speak to it, but also catch the vision of what we're trying to accomplish. And it's been invaluable because, like you mentioned with the Christian Living classes, we've had some really wonderful teachers through the ministry that has come here. And again, in addition to our staff that serves so faithfully over the years.
And I think catching the vision is something that we're really striving to do to bring these men along. You can come to camp 1 year and maybe not realize everything that, in fact, you won't realize it. We know that with our counselors. If we have a counselor who's never been to camp before, and sometimes we have to do that because of the age that they have to be, we recognize they're not going to have the full vision that we have. And it takes time to transfer that vision into the minds of others. And so this is why we like to have the younger ministers, especially where possible, and work with them for a few years where we're able to. We can't bring everybody in and keep them forever. But we want to pass on that vision so that when we're gone, we don't know how long it'll be before Christ returns, but my time at camp is coming to an end, and you have a few more years, God willing. But we want to transfer that vision so that it doesn't die. Because if you're not diligent to hang on to it, it gets lost. And it can get off track real quick.
In that regard, I really do believe that it is an unselfish way of doing it. I know you feel this way, and I certainly do, that we do need to find those men and women who have a passion, a desire, and an energy, and also can connect the dots between God's way of life and being able to pass that to young people and inspire them. I say unselfish because I feel like we've been very clear that we want to get other people on the bus. Mm-hmm. And those who are willing to be involved, we want to get those people on the bus. Yeah. And be able to pass on the baton. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking we were talking about passing on the baton the other day in some different ways. And I remember a relay race that I was in one time in YOU, and those days you're talking about, wonderful regional relay race. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, although we had a really good team, when I was passing the baton, this was the 440 relay. As I passed the baton, I missed the guy's hand in front of me. And we had a stumble, and the baton fell to the ground. And needless to say, the last two runners who were running were really unhappy with our handoff. But I was thinking about that. You know, we want to have a good handoff, yeah, a solid handoff to others who can be able to be part of this program. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're so passionate about bringing others in and teaching others.
And a lot of times it's not about what's good for them. In other words, a lot of times you got people who want to come to camp because their child or their teen is there or their preteen is there. And we understand that desire, but it has to go beyond that. It has to have the vision of, I'm here to serve not just my son, not my daughter, but I'm here to serve all the young people, and I'm here to make it good for them, not just to satisfy what I want. And that sometimes is a problem.
You know, and we talk a lot about the importance of loving our younger brothers and sisters, mm-hmm, these children who, I say children, young people who come here, and the importance of being willing to sacrifice of ourselves. And so many of our staff, they sacrifice their time, the cost to get here, their own work time in so many ways. It's a great deal of sacrifice, but it's not just loving as in having an emotional feeling towards these young people who are here. When you look out, I know when I look out at the audience here in a little while, we'll be doing our song service in the evening. And sometimes when I look out at this sea of young people's faces, I honestly get a little bit emotional. And it's because, well, just seeing them sing praise to God, it's really wonderful. But actually, we need as staff, we need to not just have an emotional feeling of love towards them, but we need to be willing to be mentors, and we need to be willing to show tough love and all those things we try to teach here. So it takes a special person who's able to be willing to be an example and loving guide and mentor, as opposed to just being emotional towards children. Yeah. So we talk a lot about the principles that we apply here, and our effort is to apply God's principles. These aren't our principles. We try to apply the principles from God's Word. But this is not the only place we have camps. You mentioned pre-teen camps, but we have Mr. Lottie Ferreira, who's here right now this year with us. He's in South Africa, and this is one example of the different camps we have around the world.
Yes, we'd like to bring some of the men in so they can see what we do here. Not that they're going to duplicate the activities that we have here necessarily, but the principles that we have here. And for the most part, I think they share the same principles. But nevertheless, we'd like them to understand what we're trying to do here. Again, it's easy for people to get away from the rock-solid principles of God's way of life. We can talk about God's way works, and I know that we use that expression, but unless you understand what it is about God's way that works of outgoing concern, it isn't just that we say God's way works, which means that we have a lot of fun. God's way works because we treat others with respect, and we have an honor code that we're going to live by. And so we want to pass on those principles. We want to pass on that vision. And, of course, sometimes they can give us some things that they do which are helpful for us as well. But with Mr. Ferreira here, all the way from South Africa, we're very appreciative of him being here. We also have camps in the Philippines. We have camps in Belgium or Europe, various places, different times, but usually just one European camp. And I know that they're talking about the possibility of camps in the future in Canada because we have more young people coming along. But we have the Adventure Camp, which this year was at the Eastern Oregon. And I'll tell you, I've seen some pictures of that, and that is absolutely spectacular. And for a young person to be able to be in God's creation in that way, being taught godly principles where you help one another, where a weaker camper or someone who hurts themselves, you have to carry their pack, you have to work with them, and show kindness and respect. All those principles are so important, and they mean something in life.
And that's the goal, is to have these common principles that we're teaching be throughout all the different camps, whether it's like Mr. Ferreira was talking about just two dorms. Mm-hmm. He was talking with some of our campers here just yesterday, and he was talking about how they have one boys' dorm and one girls' dorm, and here we have so many more people.
Yeah.
But it's the same principles are what we're teaching, whether large or small or whatever type of activity we can do.
Yes. And by the way, we have a New Zealand camp. I didn't mention that, but I should have mentioned that. And we may have another camp or two around. Or we have a South American camp for the Spanish-speaking brethren, and I've seen some pictures there. So we want everybody to have the same vision, and that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
And camp is not some type of a silo where we're not trying to build a the idea that camp is everything and it's all about camp.
Yeah.
Really, this is just one more part of the church, mm-hmm. and we don't want to ever get that mixed up too, because sometimes people can be so focused on camp that it can almost become I guess an idol a little bit, that's all about camp. But camp is simply one more part of what it means to an opportunity within the Church of God.
Yes.
Any closing words to our audience as we conclude our video?
I think we've covered a lot of what we try to do, but I think that above all else, we want to show not only that God's way works, but what it is about God's way of life. You know, in the book of Acts, it mentions the way. And there is a way of doing things, God's way. There is a Christian way of doing things. And that has to be understood in concrete terms. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to define, as you mentioned there, define respect, define behavior. And young people, all people really need to have behavior and respect. They need it defined so they understand what it means when we speak of a godly culture. It's easy to throw out terms. It's another thing to be able to transform in the minds of people what those terms mean. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be involved in camp for these years, and appreciate the opportunity to work with you. And boy, when I look out at the people here, sometimes you go to the feast, and there are so many memories that come flooding back of all the years and the people that I certainly had the honor of working with over the years, so many of our members, and I know the same is true of you.
And I don't want to forget all the other ministers and the people who are not ordained but come here and share their time, give of their time, and it costs them money to do so in most mm-hmm. cases. I don't want to leave them out, but of I so course. Much appreciate the fact that we've been able to work together as a team and share that vision and be able to promote that vision to others. So it's a wonderful thing to work together as a team. My friend.
Thank you.